I want to talk a little bit about what we're doing in those goals to maximize white-collar enforcement. And I want to step back to sort of first principles, not to get everyone back into law school and you know, the criminal law professor who's writing on the chalkboard about, you know, what are the goals of criminal law. But I do think it's important to go to the simplest terms of what white-collar criminal enforcement is trying to do. I mean, the first is obviously deterring non-compliant behavior and punishing it where it exists. But the second piece, and this is a piece that I think can get overlooked, certainly in our role as we deal with policy, is to encourage greater compliant behavior, including creating a more level playing field for those who want to play by the rules. When the two goals are well served, commerce flows more efficiently, investors have more faith in the markets, and the dollar that is earned or paid, it has more value because it hasn't had the bites taken out of it by fraud or corruption. But this gets to the fundamental conflict in terms of developing policies and that balance. You can focus on deterrence exclusively. We could prosecute cases with the intensity of a jackhammer. And yes, that's going to wind up having a deterrent effect, and we will ensure that wrongdoers are held to account and punished. But the impact on compliant behavior is largely going to be about removing those who are engaged in the misconduct from the system and to create that deterrent effect. It doesn't do much on the positive side. We're just messaging that if you break the law, we're going to catch you, we're going to punish you. It's an important message. We obviously have to catch folks, we have to punish them, and we have to get the bad actors out of the system. On the flip side, you can focus on messaging all day to encourage compliant behavior by companies and individuals, but it doesn't do much without the force of prosecutions and that deterrent on the back edge. So to maximize the twin goals of deterrence and compliance, we need to ensure that our enforcement efforts match the enforcement message and vice versa. And I think it's especially important in the area of economic crime and corporate enforcement. After all, economic crimes are motivated by economic considerations. Fraudsters who are out there trying to pursue their ends, they're in search of money through an easier path. And whatever fraud that, the form the fraud takes, that's what they're after. It's always economic, it's always money. And if there's a perception that the government isn't policing markets or enforcing all laws, the easier path looks even easier. This is where steady enforcement, that deterrent message, really comes into play. And I think in terms of the policy piece, there's another side to it, which is how do we convey on that side of it our message and what we're trying to do so that it's heard? Because we can promote our cases and we can promote that deterrent message all we want to, but in terms of our policies, a lot of those are internal. The Justice Manual contains a number of different provisions which are public, but how do we message it? And I think in the last few years, the department has tried to be increasingly transparent about how we conduct our white collar enforcement, and there should be no confusion about why. It isn't a matter of trying to be regulators where we're at. It's a matter of trying to tell the business community what we're going to look at, what we're not, what factors are going to guide us, and to try to be as clear as possible because we know that our message needs to be clear to have an impact. The department has emphasized it's focused on investigating and prosecuting individuals. I think that that's a good message, but obviously that's a message that's focused primarily on the individuals and the deterrence that it's tied to. We do believe that holding individuals accountable, that does maximize deterrence. After all, if you're an unscrupulous individual and you're sitting and you're thinking about engaging in a fraud scheme to make however much money for yourself, it's going to matter to you whether the department is actually holding people to account. Those folks, I think we all can agree, need to be messaged to, and they need to get that message. But it's not so much just the truly bad actors. We want to make sure that they get the message and they're held to account. But there are other folks who are in odd spots, and those are the ones who we want to make sure that we reach as well. For those individuals who are asked to aid and abet the criminal misconduct of their supervisors or coworkers, it'll matter that the conduct that they are joining could result in criminal penalties, could result in prison time. Maybe that person walks away from the misconduct. Maybe they become a whistleblower. Ideally, that person talks their colleagues out of whatever it is that they're proposing, or they bring legal or compliance resources to bear to stop the misconduct. And so I think that the focus on individuals is important, and it's important for both of those categories of people. And I think our prosecution numbers illustrate how intensely we've been focused on that. In 2017, the fraud section prosecuted a total of 309 individuals. That was an increase over the prior year by a significant amount. But just last year, contrast that 309 individual figure with the prosecution of 422 individuals. We're confident that there's a deterrent effect there, and we're not going to steer away from making sure to hold individuals to account. While we recognize that individual accountability is important, we also know it's not enough. Businesses that profit from misconduct also need to be held to account. And just this year, the fraud section has reached 11 corporate resolutions. Over the course of last year, all 12 months, there were 10. So there's an increase there. And we're certainly proud of the work of the fraud section. I am, as somebody who oversees it. But I want to make clear, it's not the goal of the criminal division to chase numbers and be a one-way ratchet, always in favor of greater enforcement. We need to shepherd our limited resources to pursue the most impactful cases. And we also need to make sure that we have an understanding, management, and policies in place to exercise discretion when the facts don't merit a criminal resolution.